Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. More students are graduating high school and going to college, but navigating that huge transition financially can be a big challenge. I don't know about you, but I'm one of the many who didn't learn about banking accounts, credit cards, and loans until they became part of my life, and at times with some costly consequences. But a bill aims to address this issue by requiring a financial literacy course for high school graduation, something that already happens in several states across the country, according to the American Public Education Foundation, which also gave California a grade of a D in financial literacy. So we're going to spend a good chunk of our show today diving into financial literacy and illiteracy across the state. We're starting off with a high school student already taking matters into his own hands. Sean Varshney is an Oak Ridge High School student from El Dorado Hills and co-founder of Financial Literacy for You, a peer-to-peer nonprofit working to address the need for financial literacy. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is so cool, what you created, what you co-founded, Financial Literacy for You, also known as FLY. It was founded in 2018. How did this start? Where did it begin?
Yeah, so it all really started with my brother and I, who's currently a junior right now in college. We kind of saw what was happening, what the school curriculum at our local high school, as well as middle school, and kind of just taking different trips to parts of Sacramento, and you see the amount of extreme poverty in many cases. You begin to question where that all really started. And that's the same question that my brother and I had. We saw the poverty issue as something that we felt really passionate about, and we figured out how can this be addressed. So we looked into everything, and we figured out that the biggest issue that's really causing the whole poverty kind of happening in the first place is financial illiteracy. And it's simply the case of people not being able to know simple budgeting skills or what to do with their money. So once we figured that out, we said, hey, here's a great opportunity to kind of educate the future generation and kind of prevent some of these kind of mishappenings in the future. And that's all tackled with financial literacy. And then that's where FLY was started. And we began doing lessons at middle schools, boys and girls clubs, high schools, and we're teaching exactly what financial literacy is. You know, you've talked about budgeting and you're talking about credit, investing, college loans, any of those types of things that are so crucial for later adulthood. We're exposing to you to kind of help them bridge that gap between the resources that they wouldn't be given at school and resources that they're absolutely going to need in the future. And then that's where we come in and we kind of provide those lessons.
So you clearly had a foundation of financial literacy. That's what led to you to even recognize that there was a problem, a gap that you and your brother wanted to fill. Where did that foundation come from?
Yeah, so that foundation really came from my dad, who's in the business and investments industry. I've kind of watched him throughout my whole life, watching investment moves and kind of CNBC on TV. And I've seen, you know, how to invest, where money comes from, how do you save, how do you set long-term goals for saving, how do you potentially make a college savings account. So my dad has really been the main influencer for both of us. And he's kind of gotten us exposed to many of these skills that we're now bringing to many youth at a very young age. And I've something that I've always been extremely passionate about, giving back to the community and also teaching financial skills, whether it be investing, budgeting, kind of managing future goals. That's always been something that we've been really excited about. And then that's how that led to our interest to start FLY.
When did you start, I guess, saving and budgeting? How young were you when you started really thinking about this, especially, you know, since you have your father who, you know, who works in this field?
Yeah, so I've been budgeting and saving and doing all those types of activities really since the second grade. I opened up my own portfolio back in sixth grade for investments on E-Trade, and then I was trading stocks and everything like that. But if you're just talking about general general kind of knowledge about financial literacy, things like saving up for loans, how to apply for a loan, how to manage credit, what is a credit card. I really began all those types of skills after second grade. And it's kind of been a building process of me first learning simple things like, hey, you know, what is a checkbook exactly? How do bank accounts work? And then that moves to more complex topics, right? Which leads on to credit cards. How exactly does credit and discretionary spending work? What are the different kind of metrics you want to look at when you're balancing a checkbook? And then that moves on to the very complex topics that which we also cover in our lessons, by the way, which is about the stock market. It's about future investing. What is real estate? How do you build equity? All those types of skills. So it really started with a small, kind of simple, easy to understand foundation. And then I built on to more kind of tools throughout, and then was able to kind of develop to the place where we are today.
I'm like visualizing a double screen, Sean, of you in second grade and me in second grade. And we had a very different set of awareness when it came to financial literacy, even into adulthood and going into college. What I also love about your organization is you go to the website and you see who these instructors are and their students as well. What is the benefit of having peers mentor others in financial literacy?
Yeah, it's major for the reason that instead of an adult kind of trying to teach these students about, hey, you know, this is how you start savings for college. This is how you actually go to a car dealership and you can bargain. You can try and get the best deal that you can on a car. These are the different metrics that you want to look at. This is how you maybe create a long-term financing plan. Instead of an adult teaching it to them and kind of an almost boring way where you're kind of listening to somebody just giving straight, explaining advice to you, we actually have engaging lessons where we have activities like Kahoots. We're asking questions back and forth between the students, and they're likely to participate too because we also give prizes for the people that do speak back. And the most important part about all of the lessons is that this is a youth-to-youth kind of interface where we are students teaching other students, and they feel that they are able to ask questions. They are able to kind of present themselves in a way where they want to learn, and we're helping them, we're guiding them as a friend instead of kind of a mentor or a teacher, as it may be if somebody older might have been teaching it to them. So they definitely feel that since we're there as a friend, we're both learning together, and then they're more obligated to kind of enjoy the experience, engage more because they're not afraid to ask questions. And then all of our team members are learning as well in the process. So it's fantastic. It really works out great for all of us, and especially our constituents who are at the lessons, because like I said, they love kind of the games and everything that we do during the lessons, and it reinforces their own knowledge base, and then they ask questions. So,
you know, you all may be peers and around the same age, but you all come from different lived experiences, different socioeconomic backgrounds, and different financial challenges within the home. Given, like, I know you are well aware, I mean, there's the rising cost for gas, eggs, housing, many families are financially struggling. How can a young person even begin to even think about financial literacy when they don't really have that option to think long term about financial decisions?
Yeah, so that's really where I think building your own awareness of the financial struggles and what financial literacy is so important. And that's really where I think this bill and many other bills that are being passed into law right now are there to address that topic. Because if you look at California being the largest state in the United States, we have the highest number of high school students. And what that means is that these are more students that might be on the very end of the wealth gap, coming from kind of good, wealthy families. And then there's a lot that are on the other end of it. And the only way to kind of make sure that these lessons are kind of brought to everybody to even out the playing field is by mandating something, or every school district kind of has to have some teachers doing these lessons as well. And then that'll automatically in the process get students motivated to manage their own finances, pay attention to it, and really bring attention to things that many students and even some adults don't really look at during their day, right? So I'd say it's definitely a public policy kind of way of tackling this issue that's going to be extremely influential for all high school students on both ends of this topic, whether you need it or not. I think that these lessons are very helpful. And by mandating them, everybody is given the same opportunity to kind of learn these skills and build their own knowledge, foundation of knowledge for the future.
You know, in addition to this bill that's making its way through the state capitol, also organizations like yourself from peer-to-peer kind of counseling and teaching for financial literacy, there's also social media, right? And so according to a market research company, Prolific, like 79% of millennial and Gen Z individuals, they get financial advice from social media. What are your thoughts on this? Because, you know, there's probably some good in it, but there's also, you know, some room for it to be exploited or maybe being worried that influencers with really no qualified experience are giving potentially detrimental advice.
Yeah, sure. So that's a great question. I mean, obviously, many platforms like TikTok, Instagram, they're very popular in today's world, mostly for young people. The same people that we are trying to reach with our lessons and are attending our workshops. And it's kind of a double-edged debate because to one extent, there are many qualified people on social media that have investing knowledge. For example, many of the leaders on Shark Tank, for example, which all have their own businesses. They're now investing in other businesses and they're running corporations. They have experience about what it means to kind of build wealth, how to save, how to invest, what to do, how to exactly budget. These are all qualified people that, yes, they're posting TikToks, they're posting Reels, they're trying to get the young audience engaged. And they are absolutely more than qualified, I think, to be speaking on many of these financial issues because they've been through all of it themselves and they're running their own successful businesses. Even entrepreneurs, startup entrepreneurs, they have enough knowledge to know about what it means to save, how to save, what different loans you're looking at. So all that knowledge is fantastic. But the issue with these, what this whole phenomenon on social media is that the majority of the young audience is not looking at people from Shark Tank. They're instead looking at their own influencers that they might have seen 2 weeks ago doing some kind of popular dance. And they're paying attention to that influencer a lot more, maybe even completely, instead of actually paying attention to some of the people on Shark Tank, right? And that's where we are right now. Then they're being given advice about kind of cryptocurrency and a whole bunch of other stuff that's just ended up not really helping out anybody in the end. So I think it really just comes down to who you pay attention to on these social media platforms. So to one extent, to say that social media kind of influencing what people like Shark Tank and then the other kind of dance influencers is bad. It's not necessarily bad for everybody. It's just that there's two different groups that you have to look at. And I think that people should stop paying attention and taking financial advice from somebody doing some kind of trending dance and actually pay more attention to the people who might sound a little bit boring, but are trying to help you out in the future, like the people from Shark Tank who always post on those same platforms.
Yeah. In the last few minutes we have, I want to get some of your advice because, you know, I remember when I went to college, I had a checkbook and I had to learn how to balance it. And I learned that the hard way with overdraft fees, right? Now you don't really have that, right? You got mobile apps, you also have credit cards, you have Apple Pay. It makes it really easy to spend money. What is your advice for students and young adults overcoming kind of that out of sight, out of mind mindset when spending?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question because now if you look at it, I mean, across the board, you have Apple Wallet. I mean, you have pretty much any kind of app, not even just kind of like software apps, but also corporate apps too, where you can make a purchase within a second. You just tap your phone and then it just goes into your unlimited money supply, but you're not necessarily paying attention to it. So I think many people are realizing that, especially with Venmo too. Whether you're set up on a credit card or you've got a debit card, whatever you're using to make mobile payments, I think people definitely have to kind of pay attention and do a monthly inventory of all their last purchases. That's something that we've encouraged with people with our budgeting workshops too, is that when you're making purchases within a month, you want to know what you started that month with. And then you want to know where every single purchase from that big pool of money, went to during that month. And then you can kind of tally that up in some kind of a book somewhere. If you're using cash, or maybe you're looking through your purchase statements if you're using one of these mobile apps. But I'd say doing a monthly inventory is the most important thing, because the last thing that you want to do, again, is spend too much, and then you end up owing money back and possibly even having to pay interest or suffering some kind of fee because you weren't paying attention.
Right.
So monthly checkups are definitely the most helpful.
And especially because you can have, like, you know, what seems like a small purchase, but you do it regularly, like, you know, maybe buying that coffee or whatever, and then you realize, well, this can actually really add up, or going out for lunch or what have you. Do you have an app called Green Sense? It helps balance a budget?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's our budgeting tool that we use for our folks that we have attending all of our workshops. It's completely free, available to anybody in the public. And it's really there to kind of serve as the foundation of how do you manage income and expenses, and what exactly is budgeting? How do you set long-term goals and actually attain them with finances?
Finally, before I let you go, you know, we're talking about economics, we're talking about finances, and often there isn't a lot of, you don't reflexively think of compassion, but you really are doing this even from the beginning when you talked about why you and your brother started this, out of compassion, you know, to help others gain that financial independence and literacy. Where does that compassion come from? And especially when we're talking about money and budgets and things that can be pretty dry.
Yeah. So that compassion, I think, really just comes from a kind of understanding that many people, especially many people that may not be from the same background as you, do not have the same accessibility to many of the things that you may do in your daily life. So the compassion really comes from that. It's a root from knowing that if you have something yourself, or if you've been given a certain kind of skill or piece of knowledge, you are almost, in our case, how we felt. We felt pretty obligated that we wanted to give it back to the community and kind of spread that around, but do it in a fun way. Because obviously, if you're just talking about finances and it's kind of dry topics in many cases, we have to kind of spruce it up, especially because we're dealing with a young audience. You know, they want to stay engaged. They want to have their attention, which many people in our cases already have short attention spans. So it's kind of figuring out a way, how do we get them engaged? And that's what we do, prizes and other activities during our teachings. But it's really just it's a mutual feeling between us and the rest of everybody on our team that we are given knowledge either from a young age for any type of reason. And now we want to share that with the rest of the public and kind of get everybody up to speed and kind of help out, lessen that wealth gap in the process.
Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sean Varshney is a high school student in El Dorado County and co-founder of Financial Literacy for You, or FLY for short, a nonprofit which provides peer-to-peer financial literacy to youth. Up next, we'll learn why it's taking so long to get a financial literacy course in K-12 schools. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're devoting a majority of the show to understanding financial literacy across the state, because many of us learn the opportunity and the risks of money and investing through experience, and sometimes at a high cost, the hard way. But Assembly Bill 984, authored by Democrat Kevin McCarthy, would require a financial literacy course as a graduation requirement for high school. If it becomes law, that would mean California would join a short list of states that already require financial literacy in K-12 education. We're going to continue the conversation with Fred Jones, a policy analyst for California Jumpstart, a not-for-profit organization that helps advocate for young people on financial literacy. So California Jumpstart is a state chapter, but in a nationwide organization, how did this nonprofit come about?
Well, it's a nonprofit organization of a lot of various stakeholders and individuals that are concerned about the lack of financial literacy in the nation, but California Jumpstart is focused here in California. And it's a motley crew. We've got from Federal Reserve to banks to credit unions to teachers. It's a broad swath of folks, primarily in the financial sector, that are concerned.
How has financial literacy changed and evolved over the years now that we have technology and access through mobile devices? Do you think young people now are more financially literate than perhaps a generation ago?
I think young people are tuning in more through various technological platforms, including social media, to the topic. But I do think that's a function of them having a hunger because of a lack of receiving it in their formal education. And that really is the key to sustainable financial literacy, robust and true literacy, is our K-12 system. Because if we have to rely upon other sources and, you know, have young people, and by the way, even us adults, have to go out on our own to figure out these topics that we weren't taught in school, that's a problem. So the best, most effective way of raising our financial literacy is to get robust personal finance curriculum imbued throughout our K-12 system in our state and in our country as a whole.
We're having this conversation because of Assembly Bill 984, and that would require a financial literacy course in high school. Does that already exist at some high schools?
There's close to 10 states. I don't remember the exact number. And there's a number of bills in other states that already require this as a condition of high school graduation. But, you know, out of the 1,100 or so school districts in California, there are a number that have a financial literacy or personal finance course that a student can take, let's say, in lieu of the second year math course in high school. And those have been wildly popular because a lot of young people, and again, I'll throw adults in this because it's sometimes a lifetime struggle, we struggle with theoretical concepts, especially theoretical mathematics. And what we hear often from teenagers in particular is, I need something relevant to me, relevant to the real world. And personal finance is, it's in the name, it's personal, right? So it's a very relevant way of teaching a lot of different principles, but math obviously included. So yes, there are some forward-looking superintendents and school trustees and teachers. And by the way, there's a number of teachers out there that are doing their level best to try to imbue and embed personal finance into their daily instruction. But what I've learned after over a quarter century of public policy advocacy in our state capital is that districts primarily respond to three drivers that are set in Sacramento. And that is what Sacramento requires, what Sacramento funds, and what Sacramento measures. And if you're not part of one of those three drivers, you know, you being a certain subject matter or discipline, your days are numbered in the classroom instructional day, because you're competing with other disciplines and subject matter that do have a mandate or that are part of a high stakes accountability system or that have some sort of direct funding, either state level, district level, or even national level. And so personal finance doesn't really enjoy any of that. And so, yes, there are some districts that are forward thinking, progressive, and really want to help their students and think that this is a great way of doing that. And so despite the headwinds of other priorities, they're doing this. But, you know, Assemblyman McCarty and those that are supporting the bill think that a more appropriate way of doing this and make it scalable is simply just to mandate it as part of a high school graduation requirement.
When I think of my own personal finance, you know, I learned it really on my own. When I was 18, I like went to a bank and I was like, well, guess I got to open a bank account, right? And that the same thing with credit cards and all of that stuff, you know, and then there's, you take into account student loans. My parents probably did the same thing, but they didn't obviously pass on their knowledge to me. And I don't think that that was due to anything nefarious, obviously. Why do you think there are those gaps from one generation to the next and not teaching people about financial literacy?
And I'll just say a word on that historically. You know, the Christian ethic teaches that money is filthy lucre and the root of all evil. And so there's kind of a cultural bias against having open conversations about money and entrepreneurialism and businesses. and, you know, just dinner table discussions. So I don't know if that same ethic is as predominant today as it was, say, for our parents. But it just wasn't a topic of conversation around my dinner table, and probably not yours, as you've already alluded to. And that's too bad. I think the use of money is a great way of teaching mathematical principles to primary grade level students. I mean, you have a dollar, that's 100, right? It's 100 pennies. You have a nickel, that's 1/5, you know, and you start dealing with the actual dollars as a means of teaching basic mathematics. It's a great way of teaching math in a very relevant, and they can actually see it and touch it. So this concept of personal finance and money should be taught and should be discussed more regularly than it has been in years and even generations past.
That's such a good point. You know, like, don't talk about money, don't talk about politics, these things that you're taught, you know, socially, of what's kind of taboo to talk about. But especially when it comes to finances, it can be very important. And sometimes a lot of people learn the hard way how important that is. You know, we're talking about this assembly bill. This has been attempted before, though. The last California legislative session saw two bills essentially get stalled in Senate committees without further action. So they were essentially dead. It was a bill for financial education and a bill for financial literacy. Why didn't they move forward? What was the pushback?
Ostensibly, the pushback is often fiscal related. But, you know, our public education system is 40% of our state budget. Our state budget is huge. It's like, I don't know how many states combined, maybe 15, 20 states combined just for our education portion of our state general fund. So we're talking large money. And as a result, there's strong special interest groups that have over the decades created the system and helped influence the system that we have. And there, the momentum, the inertia is to protect the status quo. So when any large scale, ambitious education reform effort starts, the status quo defenders' natural knee-jerk reaction is just to sideline it, to kill it. And they often use fiscal arguments to do it rather than on the policy merits. And I think that's kind of been what's happened to personal finance over the last decade or so, as it's been rising up in the public consciousness. And as a result, our elected officials that represent that public consciousness. And I think if this is the bill and if this is the time, I think certainly the day has come for our elected representatives to recognize the strong desire on the part of parents, on the part of youth, on the part of employers, on the part of financial sector stakeholders, that we need to increase both our individual and our collective literacy in personal finance. And so I think the day has come, or will be coming shortly, where schools are either going to on their own or need some incentive from their state elected representatives to make sure personal finance is taught to every student K-12.
Finally, given that the pushback often can come from financial concerns of funding this mandated financial literacy course for high school students, how confident are you that this bill is going to see the finish line?
Well, it took ethnic studies a decade or more to get their single semester mandated high school graduation requirement course, which they did last year, finally, after a decade of effort. You know, I don't know if it's going to take that long for personal finance. And again, there's been bills introduced and pursued for the last decade or more. And I don't know if this bill particular or this year. We have, you know, this is the beginning of a biennial 2-year session. So the author does have 2 years to try to get this bird off the ground, as it were. I do think it's going to take a lot of tarmac to get this large bird off the ground. It's ambitious. But this particular author happens to also chair the Budget Subcommittee on Education Finance. So he's got some control over that fiscal argument, in the way that prior authors in prior years did not have the same type of leverage. So, you know, the sponsors of this bill and the supporters of this bill look to the author and say, hey, I think we've got the right guy this time to make this a real possibility, notwithstanding its ambitious aims. And let me just add one more point. You know, in recent years, schools have really started adding more career technical education and vocational education. That's become a hot topic over the last 10 years, which I'm very glad. So schools are doing a better job teaching kids what they can do to earn money once they leave school, whether it's after high school or college or postgraduate work. But schools still are not doing anything to teach them what to do with that money once they earn it. And that really kind of is at the heart of personal finance. You earn the money, but then the question is, what do you do with that money? How can you have that money actually earn money for you passively? There's lots of creative ways in this very diverse economy to make your money work for you. And unfortunately, most schools don't teach any of those principles. So let's go beyond just teaching kids how to make money. Let's teach them what to do with it once they've earned it.
Thank you so much, Fred.
Thank you for the time, Vicki.
Fred Jones is a policy analyst for California Jumpstart, a not-for-profit organization with the goal of educating young people on financial literacy. We're talking about Assembly Bill 984, which, if it becomes law, would require a financial literacy course in K-12 education. Still ahead, Sac State women's basketball makes history with their first March Madness appearance. We break down their historic season and what it means for the future of the Hornet sports program. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.